The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello, welcome to the Yes to Life show. If you're a new listener, I'm Robin Daly, and I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that helps people with cancer to understand and access integrative medicine. Hence, the Yes to Life show is all about integrative medicine and cancer. My guest on today's show has many strings to his bow, and amongst them, he's an author. Keith Foster has written on a range of subjects, including cancer, and I'm speaking to Keith over the phone at his home in Wales. Good morning, Keith. Thanks very much indeed for coming on the Yes to Life show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's nice to hear from you.
So, the description of your book opens by saying, "The answer to cancer provides an easy-to-follow, clear explanation of what cancer is, how it arises, and how it can be overcome."
That's right.
So you describe yourself as a natural philosopher, author, and polymath. Now, how can you so confidently state that you have answers to questions that by now millions of highly qualified specialist scientists have spent untold hours and resources trying to answer?
Well, it may be that millions of them have done that, but there's also a very strong body of evidence of good research by top-flight scientists to say the opposite, that there are answers to these questions and there are ways of handling what is in fact a metabolic disorder.
Mm-hmm.
When I call myself a natural philosopher, it's what they used to call scientists in the Middle Ages before, people like Newton, when they were interested in a wide variety of things and had the leisure to study a wide variety of things, not necessarily bringing any of it to any conclusion, but simply being known for the fact that they were widely read.
Mm.
So that's me. And widely read.
Right. Well, that's an interesting standpoint, and it is a different perspective to that of a specialist, certainly.
But it is. But specialism has its drawbacks.
It does.
when you see, for instance, highly qualified specialists spent untold hours trying to find an answer, they're looking, to my mind, in the wrong direction.
Right.
They're tinkering with the mechanism and not dealing with the cause. Now, to look for a bacterial or viral cause for cancer is frankly a waste of time, because most of the time there isn't a bacterial or viral cause. There is, a breakdown in the metabolism where things get out of hand. And if you go back in scientific history, you'll find a chap called Antoine Béchamp, and he studied and referred to the ability of microbes to change from one form to another, like a caterpillar changing into a butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And a bit later on, the German professor of zoology and microbiology, Günther Eiderlein, in 1925, described the different stages of a microbe that is normally present in the body as tiny colloidal protein units. And he observed that they grow to increasingly higher bacterial forms and finally to fungi as the acid-alkaline balance of the stomach and therefore of the blood goes out of kilter. The same researchers were looking at this were Royal Raymond Rife, Wilhelm Reich, Virginia Livingstone Wheeler, Alan Cantwell, Gaston Maison. They've described the same phenomena. And Dr. Robert Young said, the truth about germs is there's only one physiological disease, the over-acidification of the body, due primarily to an inverted way of eating and living. This over-acidification leads to the one sickness or primary symptom, which is the overgrowth in the body of microorganisms whose poisons produce the symptoms we call disease. Mm-hmm. So you see, that's a completely different way.
It certainly is.
And in his book, The Dream and Lie of Louis Pasteur, Dr. M.L. Leveson, who's an MA, PhD, MA, says that the entire fabric of the germ theory rests upon the assumption which not only have not been proved, but which are incapable of proof, that germs don't cause diseases, diseases cause germs. And the point he makes, and so do Béchamp and Claude Bernard, that there's not much profit in prevention. So changing diet and changing the way we live, which is essential if we're going to overcome cancer, is not at all profitable. So that the pharmaceutical industry, which by and large drives the medical industry, wouldn't be making their profits. And I'm not saying that necessarily these are extremely heartless people. What I am saying is that we were duped by the statement of Pasteur that he'd found the mechanism of illness. He hadn't. If your scientists, the ones you talk about, have spent untold hours and resources trying to find an answer, I would submit that they're looking in the wrong direction.
Right, right. Okay, fair enough. And I think you've made the case for the sort of generalised view of things, the seeing the wood for the trees, which is also an important aspect of this. So you've described the method of recovery that you're advocating as natural. So in what ways is it natural? And can you contrast and compare this approach with conventional treatments?
Yes, absolutely. What I would suggest is the best way of dealing with cancer is first to have a couple of days of fast to let your system clear up a little bit, then to have a good dose over several weeks of a charcoal which is rich in the molecule C60, as that is capable of absorbing 4,000 acidic toxins and taking them out of the body naturally. As these toxins are all acidic, as the acidity reduces, then the alkalinity comes back into balance, and you start to feel better. Next, you should take vitamin C, and take that in large quantities, because that acts as an oxygen bridge to the blood supply. So once your system is cleaner and the pH is better in balance, then you want to be taking vitamin C, because your bloodstream is able to absorb a lot more oxygen when it's in the natural balance, state. That is to say, a healthy body functions properly when it's slightly alkaline. Deviations in the blood above or below a pH range of 7.30 to 7.45 signals dangerous symptoms or states of disease. So that when your solid tissue's pH levels deviate from a healthy range, 7.2 to 7.5, to an acidic state, that's below 7, the acid waste normally discarded through the body's elimination routes starts to back up and clog the system. So you see, straight away, you can see that you need to get the rubbish out of your body as best you can, and you need to get vitamin C in, because vitamin C acts as a bridge via methylglyoxal to the cells and transports more oxygen to each cell. Now, the advantage of that, of course, is that the cells run on electrical power, on oxygen, which carries electrons into the cells, and the consequence of that is that if you provide more oxygen in the bloodstream, you're upping the electron supply, which is what the body needs. Omega-3 oil catalyzes the above, and the best oil to use there is linseed. And then moving on to finish the disinfection process, iodine is ideal. You want to be taking some iodine every day, because it's funny, but it's true. that there's a sort of gradient between people who traditionally lived in the mountains and the people who lived by the seaside.
Mm-hmm.
The people with more fish in their diets and particularly more seaweed suffer far less than the people who are iodine deficient.
Suffer generally, or is it being specific to cancer?
Generally, we're iodine deficient. And because in bread and staples like that, they've replaced iodine with bromine, and in the dairy industry particularly, then we're just not getting the iodine we're used to. Add to that the fact that we are not using the salt that we were traditionally used for millions of years. Instead, we're taking in refined salt products. They don't have any iodine in them, whereas sea salt has iodine in it. So it's a dietary deficiency there,
yes,
which is getting worse.
Can I just be clear, though? Are you linking this iodine deficiency with cancer particularly, or with disease in general, chronic disease?
Disease in general, but
right.
You asked me about cancer, so that's what I'm doing.
Right, thank you.
But yes, diseases in general. If your immune system is weakened, then you're going to catch anything that's going round.
Right.
And this all leads on to an alkaline diet. We are traditionally, and by our development, hunter-gatherers, and our diet would have been 83% of green stuff during our wandering period, when we were transferring from Cro-Magnon to modern man. Our diets in those days would have been what we could collect. So there'd be roots, shoots, fruit, berries, a whole range of foodstuffs that we no longer use, which were high in vitamin C, high in oxygen, and with plenty of roughage. So once we settled down and about 10,000 years ago and started to till the land and grow spelt, which was the first grain we grew in Mesopotamia, then our health suffered and our longevity suffered.
So that's clear that all those things that you're promoting there are natural. So this is something which, in a way, you would advise this to anybody as a preventative route, as you were talking
Absolutely.
About prevention earlier on. But you're also saying this is for somebody who's accumulated a lot of bad stuff through their life, one way or another, of general ill health, it would still be a way to regain good health.
Yes, over a longish period.
Right.
I mean, it does take time to turn cancer around. And it has been proven now by, not only by the Nobel Prize winner Linus Pauling, but by the University of Kansas, that vitamin C, particularly vitamin C injections, can turn cancer around.
Right. Okay, so basically you would say then that this whole regime is a health-promoting regime.
Yes, and it's an educational regime as well. I mean, I've written several books on cancer. You've got one of them there. And in one, I describe very clearly the mechanism which Linus Pauling described when he and Ewan Cameron were curing people of cancer at the Vale of Leven Hospital near Glasgow in Loch Lomond. And they were using massive doses of vitamin C, and they were reversing cancers. Stamped on by the medical profession, and subsequently now thought to be, you know, wrong information. It's absolutely right, and the University of Kansas has just proved it by publishing their research. But it goes back beyond Linus Pauling. There's a chap called Zent Georgi who discovered vitamin C, who recommended the use of vitamin C and iodine. His name is Dr. Albert S-Z-E-N-T G-Y-O umlaut R-G-Y-I.
Right.
I've never pronounced.
No.
But he recommends that everybody use iodine frequently, and that everybody use vitamin C. It got him a Nobel Prize. So when you're talking about the millions of scientists, specialists looking in one direction or another, overlooking the fact that I have a record of at least 3 Nobel Prizes awarded on the basis of breakthroughs in vitamin therapy.
Okay, so coming to this topic of science in general, you describe science as a present-day religion, and I think I'm with you on this. If you looked at a sort of textbook definition of science, you'd get the impression that certainly it wasn't dogmatic, and you know, the experience of genuine scientists when you come across them is that they're endlessly curious, open-minded, and overridingly humble regarding what they understand. And when you come across scientists like that, well, you think, well, this is brilliant. I mean, we need people like that. We need to understand the world. But sadly, science seems to generally occupy the position that I say of, like, they used to think they knew, but now we know. Seems to be the regular stance of science, whenever it was.
And,
you know, 21st century heretics right now being prosecuted for even questioning current scientific dogma. You know,
well, that's why I'm a bit worried about this programme, because they might come around and kill me.
Well, you know, it's a sad state of affairs that this is like this, that you can't actually have a debate about whether something is actually true or not. It has to be accepted as the truth. And
Yeah, but it does seem to be the way.
And, yeah, I just wondered if you'd like to say a little bit about science as religion.
Yeah, I would. It's where to begin, really. See, a lot of people have invested very heavily of their lives and of their wealth into learning the standard orthodoxy of medicine. And to challenge that orthodoxy is to challenge their feeling of well-being and their investment. I mean, the entire pharmaceutical industry, which actually sprang out of aspirin in the first place, is now very heavily invested into medicines which are increasingly reductive in their approach to problems.
Yes.
And that is... It's faith, you know. You have to believe in the orthodoxy, and you have to conform to it, otherwise you're challenging my way of life, you're challenging my income, you're challenging my my belief system. Now, really, a true scientific system should be one that can be constantly challenged and evidence presented which changes its perspective. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it certainly does, yeah.
So that's where I'm going with this discussion at the moment, that I think it's to be a scientist is to be someone who looks for causes and reasons and methods. So, you know, how does this work? Let's take it apart and have a look at it and see how it works. And then when you find an answer which doesn't gel with the orthodoxy, then you have to go and live in Pembrokeshire and write obscure books, which nobody likes.
Yeah.
Keep very quiet.
I think, in my own view, is that in a way the aspect of science that keeps it kind of religious, if you like, is much like the force that's at work within our health service, which is actually, it's a very brutal world, and that people who step out of line are treated with brutality, basically, and can have their lives destroyed. This is anything other than encouraging to look into things, to ask questions, to find out about things. It actually encourages people to conform and not step out of line.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like religion in the Middle Ages, isn't it?
Yes. Very.
You either conformed or you got burned.
Yep. Yeah, very like it.
And there's a particular aspect of this which is quite interesting. There's a chap called Tullio Simoncini. He's an oncologist in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's in Portugal now, but he wrote a book saying, which is entitled Cancer is a Fungus.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on to, at great length, it's a very, very well-written book. The man is a very, very intelligent and a very admirable person. And he's written this book, Cancer is a Fungus, whereby he points out that it has all the the outgrowth functions of candida, which is everywhere in the body. So this is followed by an article by Walter Lust, who's an Australian researcher, and his article was entitled, Is Invasive Cancer a Hyphal Fungus? And the other one is called The New Direction in Cancer Therapy. So as these people come out of the protective woodwork and start to publish their ideas and theories, that is a challenge to the cancer industry. And it's very sad that they take it as such, rather than saying, well, let's have a careful look at this and prove it or disprove it. Hmm. Not let's just poo-poo it out of hand, because it doesn't fit in with our perceived ideas. And the National Health, God bless it, is it's rather like the old monasteries, you know, they were the sort of light industrial units of the Dark Ages. Well, the National Health is more or less stuck in the Dark Ages as regards treatment. And I really admire it. I admire its setup. I admire Aaron Bevan, who helped set it up. But I'm sorry to say that a lot of the things that I talk about in my books are cheap, reliable, easy, and have measurably good effect. So why wouldn't you use them instead of using antibiotics, which are often contaminated, usually dangerous, and frequently ineffective? Sorry, that sounds awfully fanatical, but that's the way life is.
Well, I agree that it's actually quite refreshing. I just listened to the news on my way here today, and I was quite something to hear Nice recommending people use honey rather than antibiotics if they have a cough. I thought, well, this is a breakthrough, really, to hear Nice actually recommending anything that's not a drug.
Yeah. Well, of course, honey works extremely well. On wounds.
Yeah.
Since the beginning of time, really.
Yeah. Okay, so I met up with world-class theoretical physicist Paul Davies a year or so ago.
Fascinating.
Yeah, very interesting fellow. And he was tasked by the NCI in America with taking a fresh look at cancer. But unfortunately, he came back with what you would say is the wrong answer, i.e. the answer that the cancer establishment didn't really want to hear. That cancer cells saw them as a primitive type of life form, totally dependent on low oxygen, acidic, sugar-rich environment to thrive. I imagine you kind of resonate with this. Would you like to say why?
Well, because, as I said at the beginning, the term pleomorphism, coined by the French chemist and biologist Antoine Béchamp, and then followed on by Gunther Enderlein, proved scientifically that the climate in the body, the terrain of the blood, was what caused the changes in the microzymas, that is to say the tiny colloidal protein units that are almost indestructible. They change in the body and they migrate up from bacteria to virus to fungus, as I've already said. So, yeah, I think that's the way medicine should be going. It started out on the wrong premise, because doctors in those days could make a very good living out of prescribing a wide variety of medicines. They did so, and they do so to this day. And they're well-intentioned, decent people, but they're ill-informed, in my view.
Well, he described the whole of the cancer research establishment as charging up the wrong path.
Yeah, same difference.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting that somebody like him, who's brought in for a combination of his brilliance but his non-cancer background, to take a kind of absolutely fresh look at the situation and see if he could come up with something new. And, well, it wasn't new what he came up with in one way, but it was certainly new to them.
Well, it's new to the people he was delivering it to, because they didn't know about it. I mean, they paid him a fortune to go and find out, and he did.
Yeah. Okay, well, given these three cornerstones, if you like, of a cancer-friendly environment, that's having low oxygen, an acidic environment, and plentiful supply of glucose, do you want to just line up the measures that you advocate with these three problems?
Up to a point, yes. They are all dealing with the body's chemistry. I move on in the book that you've got that I wrote to talk about the electromagnetic environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that's come to mind a lot more recently, particularly with the internet, because an awful lot of people are going to be getting cancer or have cancer in some form because they are acting as conductors of unusual frequencies when sitting in front of computers or playing with mobile phones or whatever. This is an aspect of nature that we haven't lived with. It's not natural to us.
Yeah, very new, yeah.
Beyond a certain level of electromagnetic activity in our bodies, and we're going to pay the price. And we are paying a price now with cancer running off a scale. I mean, it's increasing year on year. And we overlook the fact that we're a collection of dynamic electrical circuits in our bodies, and the complexity of our bodies, trillions of cells constantly transmit and receive energy in the course of their programmed biochemical reactions. And you learn that at grade school, you know, if there's a chemical reaction, it is presaged by an electronic reaction. Molecules move, electrons move. Our hearts, brains, nervous system, muscles and immune systems are prime example of electrical systems operating within our bioelectrical body. There's a guy called Roger Applewhite published a theory in 2005, he's an electrical engineer, that talked about grounding, which is a very, very interesting way of looking at it. The planet is a 6 trillion metric ton battery, which is constantly being replenished by solar radiation, lightning and heat and so forth. The rhythmic pulsations of natural energy flowing through and from the surface of the Earth to the protective shields of the Van Allen belt keep the biological machinery on Earth running, of life on Earth running in rhythm and balance. So you've got to take into account the electromagnetic environment when you start talking about how to help people recover their health.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at how it works. The fact that we wear shoes, mostly with rubber soles, insulate us from our environment, our electronic environment. If you stand outside wearing your shoes, there is a differential in the electrical condition of 350 volts in your headspace. So at the Earth, 0 volts, because it's a negative pole, and on your head, there are 350 volts. That's the differential between the Earth and the top of your head. If you take your shoes off, you become part of the Earth, so that 350-volt charge is deflected away from you because your body takes on a negative charge. So ancient civilizations were well aware of this, and the fact that our blood, which is the same composition as seawater in the Cambrian, is very sensitive to the oscillations in the environment. And we used magnetism as a healing force for millions of years. The magnetic fields of the moon and the sun, plus the effects of the solar wind's magnetic field, induce a magnetic field in the Earth of a strength depending on its mineral content, the distance, and the intervening state of the intervening electrolyte, which is the air. So we are conductors, we are antenna for the electricity flow that goes between the Earth and the ionosphere. Now that's an interesting thought, because as that is now being loaded with all manner of unusual vibrations and unusual currents, then it's not necessarily able to handle them very well. I've measured the flow in and out of the acupuncture point of the body, and this is basically on Chinese medicine. These ancient medicinal systems talk a great deal about prana or qi or flow, and that what they're talking about are the metabolic pathways in the body which conduct the electricity in our environment up and down our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are allowed to do so freely, then they help us to be very healthy. And by stimulating them, you can get them to help heal you. The corollary of that is if you're cut off from them, or they're dramatically overloaded by aberrant diet or by external radiation, then you're in trouble. And that's an aspect of medicine that practically nobody in the published world looks at. There are several devices around which work very well to unblock these lines, and the original device was acupuncture.
Okay, well look, that's all very interesting, and as you say, it's not exactly mainstream, any of that.
Not really. Unless you're Chinese, of course, which is mainstream in China.
Yes. So how does, have you brought that in addition to dealing with, I mean, I started the question from these three cornerstones of a cancer-friendly environment, you know, the low oxygen, the acidic environment, and the glucose, but you've brought this in as part of the solution to those, or as an additional thing that needs to be looked at the same time as those three?
As an additional thing.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you've put another one in there.
I'd like to preface that by mentioning that the body is an antenna.
Yes.
So when the antenna is functioning properly, then less problems arise.
Right. Okay.
And there are ways you can do that. I mean, you can use a negative ionizer, which enriches the air that you're breathing and sends more energy through your system. Well, I can go on in this vein about electromedicine, which I know a little bit, but it gets quite scientific.
Yes. Yeah, well, I've spoken to others about this, particularly about EMFs. And there's great concern amongst some people who know a lot about these things about the fact that, yes, it's well known that cells in our body do actually respond to these things, in both positive and negative ways. So it behooves us to know what is happening and what we want to expose ourselves to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, there's great concern, particularly with the march of EMFs with the development of mobile technology, and you know, there's been discussion recently about the new standard of mobile technology, which requires a much greater saturation the previous one, which, and we're, you know, they're talking about masts literally hundreds of yards apart between each mast, you know, soaking the public in 5G. So this must be something I imagine you're pretty concerned about too.
Absolutely, I'm very concerned about it, and particularly the aspect of it which directly affects our blood supply. The fact is that I have been able to show over the years that the civilization before us relied heavily on an understanding of the electromagnetic nature of healing and of energy. And you might be surprised to know that the legions, the Roman legions, always marched along ley lines, because ley lines give more energy, because the spiral energy fields coming off ley lines rotate in a left-handed fashion, which accords with the way that cells gain their energy, which is called Boyer's binding mechanism. And that is a mechanism whereby a bent axle circles around anticlockwise, as do the spirals coming from the negatively charged ley lines. Now, similarly, the converse of this, if you're on a black line where the energy coming off spirals in the other direction, then you get cancer. You get cancer areas, cancer houses, cancer lines. Some very good German research shows that this is the case. And therefore, it behooves us to look at our entire electromagnetic environment to make sure that our energy isn't being sapped, pulled down by electromagnetic fields, which is what these spirals of energy are, that we can't see, but we certainly can feel. And you'll find that cats will sleep on negative lines. Dogs won't. Cattle will follow negative lines, which are the ley lines which rotate, the energy fields rotate in a left-handed fashion. So animals can instinctively use these things and avoid the black lines. So that's something we should look at, because there are very sound statistical evidence produced in Germany showing that these lines exist, that there are more accidents on these lines, and so forth.
All right. Well, I can't claim to know anything much about that myself, but all very interesting. Since we're going in this direction of talking about electrical energy, I just wanted to come back to your book, and I noted the fact that the subtitle on there is an electron deficit condition. I wanted to know why you'd put that on the cover.
Well, because the cells in the human body use electron energy to function, so that when there is when they're stressed, there's an outflow of energy. There's an outflow of electrons, and the cell becomes worn out, if you like. And now, as the cell tires and becomes worn out, it flips its energy source. Now, cells gain energy from light being taken by electrons into the cell. When they become exhausted, when their batteries are flattened, they can no longer take that energy in. So they start to ferment. And that is cancer. Cancer is a fermenting process.
Yes. Okay.
That's why I said it. And a lot of people have climbed on that particular, quite accurate bandwagon, with methods of reviving the cells. And I suspect that acupuncture is one of them. Certainly various electronic devices work. And I suppose by placing a cell in a more, in an enriched electronic environment, you can actually bring it back from the dead, or the dying, as you say.
Right, so this is using EMFs, if you like, in a positive way.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, well, look, we're getting on towards the end of the program. I want to now loop back to something you said earlier on. You mentioned right at the beginning of your program of steps to take, you talked about doing a fast. I think it's something you're quite keen on. So do you want to say why and what you think the most effective fasting programs look like?
Yes, I can. The bloodstream carries nutrients and all manner of things around the body to donate to the cells. These come through the stomach and the lungs and through the fabric of the body. But the idea of fasting is to allow your liver to clean up your act, to take out the nasties that have accumulated and to get rid of them through your normal evacuation systems. If the blood is quite thick and turgid and full of foreign bodies, I suppose, it's very difficult for any organ in the body to do its job properly. A, because it's handling a damaged food supply, and B, because it has greater electrical resistivity. So the idea of fasting is to allow your liver over a shortish period of time to clean up your system. And you find that as you continue a fast, your body ultimately uses all of the available chemicals to, as the first food. You actually burn off all of the things you don't want in your bloodstream. So it cleans up the whole act. I stumbled across this 50 years ago, reading about burrs and hibernation. When burrs go into hibernation, they've eaten as much as they can pack in.
Yeah.
And then they go for, you know, 3 or 4 months of sleep. When they go in, their flesh is almost poisonous. When they come out, their flesh is pure, very nice to eat, and people, especially American Indians, used to do that.
Mm.
The fact is that their gut is also sterile, so that their system has worked away to clean up their act internally, to get them really fit and well. And the reason I advocate fasting is that it gives your organs the time to completely clean your body up. And at that point, all of the defense mechanisms work far better. You're far more healthy. You have a more balanced mind as well.
Hmm. Okay.
So
well,
that's my answer.
Yeah, makes complete sense. Okay, so lastly, I just wanted to round off by asking you, the Yes Life Show, of course, it's all about integrative medicine for cancer, and integrative medicine draws from the broadest spectrum of available resources, which includes the conventional resources of the NHS and lots of natural approaches. And integrative medicine, at its best, it involves sophisticated, rational combinations of conventional and natural or lifestyle approaches. I'd like to know what you think about that.
I think a combination is a very good approach, because there are some stages in the development of cancer which, quite frankly, are best cut out. You know, so that you can, instead of having this enormous sag, you have at least stimulated the immune system to work better.
Right.
I don't like chemotherapy. I don't like radiotherapy for a whole variety of reasons. I don't particularly like surgery. But there are times when it's very useful. But I do believe that to follow it up then with harsh and complex chemicals is the wrong route to take.
Hmm.
And I'm not saying that I'm necessarily right about this, but I believe that I am. So
right.
It's my belief system against their belief system.
Right. Okay. Well, it's good to hear. All right, look, it's been really interesting to speak today, Keith. Thanks very much indeed. We're going to wrap it up there, but thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
You can find links to material mentioned in today's show on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Click the show logo on the homepage. There you'll also find links to Keith's own website, that's keithfoster.co.uk, where you can find details of all his books. Yes to Life has an event next month that may interest you. It's called Healing with Painting and Playing with Colour, and it's on the 26th of September in central London. Look at the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, under events, or on the Yes to Life Facebook page for more details and for booking. Also, there's still time to sign up for the Yes to Life 10K in Victoria Park, London on October the 6th. It has its own website at yestolife10k.org, yestolife10k.org, where you can find out more and sign up for the run. Next week, I shall be visiting the High Tree Clinic in Sussex to talk to Dr. Siegfried Trefzer. Hope you can join me again. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.